During the early months of the pandemic response, UW Health reports that calls to their pain management clinic increased between 50 and 70%. It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Kate Archer Kent this morning. And our next guest is the medical director of that clinic. He's also medical director of UW Pain Services, as well as a chronic pain physician in his own right. Have you dealt with chronic pain during COVID-19? Or what can you say about those you know and how they're overcoming the challenges of isolation to seek treatment and relief? Phone number to the studio is 1-800-642-1234. You can always email the show ideas@wpr.org. Our guest is Dr. Abed Al-Sayed. Let's just call him Dr. Al. Dr. Al, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Let's begin with a baseline if we can, because all of us feel the aches and pains now and again. But how do you define chronic pain?
Chronic pain is generally defined as pain that will continue for more than 3 months.
3 months. That's a long time to feel a little ache, a little pain. What happens over those 3 months when you have the pain that persists that long, doctor?
So a very good question. Sometimes there is a reason why the person may have pain, like after surgery or after a trauma, like a car accident or so. And at that point, we hope that this is an acute pain that will resolve within the few months, which usually it does. But if it continues beyond 3 months, that's when it becomes a chronic. Unfortunately, sometimes the pain just happens with no acute inciting event. And that's when the probabilities of being chronic are much higher.
Dr. Al, are there different ways that chronic pain can reveal itself in our bodies? How do we understand, in our central nervous system, how do we understand the different ways that chronic pain can reveal itself?
Yes, it can reveal itself by different ways. It can be headaches, it can be abdominal pain, it can be depending on the part of the body. There are different types of chronic pain as well, which can be neuropathic pain, somatic pain, visceral pain in the abdomens. And I always say pain can be a blessing because that's what have you go to the, seek help, and you may find a diagnosis that needs immediate attention. I would give this an example of cancer. Most of the time cancer will reveal itself as pain. So it can be a blessing as well.
So what are, and you mentioned cancer here, what are some of the common diseases that can cause chronic pain?
What we have seen is that, there are a huge, huge list of diseases that can cause chronic pain. It can be the cancer, can be traumas, can be just regular aging, arthritis, which majority of what we see right now, it can be related to trauma, surgery, sometimes even like unknown reasons, like diseases of the nerves, which can happen due to any irritation, can be related to nutrition, can be related to many, many factors.
Dr. Abed Al-Sayed, our guest, he is the medical director of the UW Pain Services and the UW Pain Management Clinic, taking your calls at 1-800-642-1234. If you are someone with a chronic illness or ailment, what can you tell us about how you've been treated and how you deal with the issue, how you alleviate your pain? And so when we talk about chronic pain, doctor, when it comes to diagnosis, it's not like an x-ray. It's not like you can see a broken bone. Pain becomes a self-reporting measure. And what are the perils there for a doctor in diagnosing a chronic pain when it's not something you can necessarily identify in an x-ray?
It's very actually important question as well, because I always tell, my fellows and my trainees, the first thing you have to believe the patient. You shouldn't be assuming that someone coming in pain is not telling you the truth. So always believe the patient. And then run some tests like MRIs, images, nerve conduction studies, and you actually might find a reason for that pain. But even if you don't find something on images, pain still can be there and hard to be seen by any other form. So just continue to treat the pain, and there are many ways we can sometimes understand more about the pain, like by using the pain psychology service, because sometimes it can be a psychological issue behind the pain. We can refer to physical therapy. So the treatment sometimes is just exploring more about, you know, correcting stature, correcting a psychological problem, relieving a stress that can help the patient get over the pain.
Have we seen differences in how, in general, generalizing here, have we seen differences in how the medical community treats different populations based on their self-reporting of pain, doctor?
I'm not sure if you're talking about the different population.
Race, gender, and how those play into how self-reporting is received?
Yes, it's unfortunately that some reports show that if you are from certain groups or ethnicities, you might be undertreated when you go complain about pain. And these are things we're trying to start teaching in medical school about equity and treating people equally. I personally have a research and publication on one of, treating pain in the LGBTQ, that they've been suffered, not being believed, not being well perceived.
You've got a published paper on this.
Yes, I'm publishing even more, because what we noticed is sometimes healthcare providers perceive certain groups in a different way than they perceive others, which is definitely the wrong thing to do in medicine. I have publication with numbers and actually literature review published on our American Society of Regional Anesthesia and Pain Medicine newsletter.
Dr. Al, do you get to the why of the matter? Is there a speculative or hypothesis as to why self-reporting is treated differently among different populations?
Yes, and that's not a problem in pain. That's in all, actually,
right,
fields of medicine. It's about, you think that people are, seeking medications, trying to get to pain medications and addict them, personal discrimination.
Well, the reason I brought it up, doctor, is we've seen stories about this in treating COVID-19. So I was wondering, is this something we see in treating chronic pain? And you say this is something that we see in self-reporting in medicine across the board.
It is, and it is a major problem that we need to work on.
Yeah, and it brings me to my next question, Dr. Al, and that is, what is the quality of life for somebody? What is their mental health when their physical health is left in chronic pain? What's it like living when you've got a pain that has persisted for more than 3 months?
Yes, this is actually the main problem of pain. Sometimes it's not the pain itself. It's what's caused by the pain. And I want you to think of this old patient who have knee pain. I mean, many, many patients have knee pain. But then you think of them, all of a sudden they can't move, they can't do their daily activities, they can't go visit their grandkids or their kids, they miss on social events, and they develop depression, obesity, and the pain gets worse, and then it becomes a huge, and as you develop those, you start getting cardiac conditions, cognitive ability conditions. Not treating pain can be really a very slippery slope of leading to suicide and more major problems.
So then it brings us to the importance of access and treatment, which brings us to how COVID-19 has created a challenge for all of us. Dr. Al is with us. He is the chronic pain physician and an assistant professor of anesthesiology at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. You work at a rehabilitation center, and how has your work changed during COVID-19? 1-800-642-1234 is the number of the studio. And Dr. Al, since the pandemic began, how have staff at the UW Pain Clinic treated patients for pain?
So I want to give really credit to all my colleagues in the pain clinic, including our MAs, nurses, physicians, all the support staff, for doing a fantastic job in that we turned it during the lockdown to telemedicine, where we could treat our patients by phone video. It was not as good as seeing patients in person, but we kept things going. And after the COVID, of course, we all are suffering right now, the leave for quarantine, infections, being understaffed all the time. And again, credit to everybody who goes to work every day doing the job of two or three people sometimes, because people are out to serve our patients. So things has been going very efficient, very good. Spirits are high. And I'm hoping now vaccination has started that I'm hoping that at least our healthcare system will be in a strong shape to be able to help patients.
So telehealth has helped connect patients with medical treatment, but where? How do you decide when it's time to actually do an in-person visit as opposed to telehealth? Is there a mandate to bring in somebody, or how do you make that decision?
My colleagues and myself, we developed sort of an agreement who will be seen by telemedicine versus in person to provide the best care. So everybody, we can shift to telemedicine, we do it. If a quick recheck, revisit by phone our patient that we have known for years. New patients who are at high risk, we use video visits. Then if anything happened during those visits on the phone or by video, we do ask the patient that's probably to make a more accurate decision. We need to see the patient in person.
Have your patients experienced accessibility issues to pain medication because of the COVID-19 crisis, doctor?
Overall, there has been a problem in managing pain, particularly during the pandemic and during our surges, in that many patients had to be treated by narcotics or pain medications. And then the challenge became is getting patients back to their treatments and stopping the narcotics. We have done it very well again at UW, but I know it's been a struggle all across the nation, and we all are worried about another opioid epidemic evolving with the COVID pandemic.
So, Dr. Al, you're saying, so in order to continue care for chronic pain patients, extend the opportunity for narcotics. But with the opportunity for narcotics, as we have seen in recent past, comes the dangers of addiction. And so how does the pain clinic weigh those for the sake of the treatment of the patient?
We have been successful in just getting our patients. So all our facilities at UW for chronic pain are open and operating. So it was really good for us that we can bring the patient back and do what we used to do without having to use narcotics. But all across the nation, many, many pain programs don't have the same support in that they can't perform the same numbers of interventions again, or some patients cannot come to the clinic due to lack of regulations, restrictions, and those patients continue to be on narcotics. So it will be a problem down the road.
Outside of prescription medication, what do you suggest people can do for their chronic pain, doctor?
It's always good to try non-opioid alternatives, which are too many. So seek help from a specialist. I'll ask primary care providers and all other people who are standing in this battle during the pandemic is get help and seek help from the professionals to try to explore more efficient and non-opioid methods for treating pain.
And we got about a minute before the news. We've got the news here, Dr. Al, but I would be interested to know when you do have somebody who you suspect may be dealing with an addiction or struggling with an addiction, how do you approach them? And maybe this is better for after the news, because I would be very interested in how, as a system, we treat people with addictions while at the same time treating people with chronic pain with the whatever treatment they need to seek relief. And how do you balance those two things? We'll get to that right after the news with our guest, Dr. Ala Abed Al-Sayed. He is the medical director of the UW Pain Clinic. He offers interventional pain treatment and performs procedures at the Madison Surgery Center. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Kate Archer Kent today, and there is time to take your questions after the news about treating chronic pain, diagnosing it, especially during a global pandemic. You're listening to The Morning Show, and this is the Ideas Network. Bipartisanship on display a few weeks ago in Washington, D.C., as Republicans and Democrats alike on a congressional committee excoriated members of the Sackler family from Purdue Pharmaceuticals for profiting by misleading Americans about the fatal dangers of their pharmaceutical opiates, OxyContin. It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Kate Archer Kent. And for some people who are coping with chronic pain, those same types of pharmaceutical opiates can mean the difference between participating and debilitating. A coronavirus pandemic, an opiate epidemic, and compassionate care for all in need How can we best wisely weigh it all? 1-800-642-1234. Number to the studio. Email ideas at WPR.org. Dr. Ala Abed El-Sayed is a chronic pain physician and works at the medical as the medical director at the UW Pain Clinic. And doctor, you started this morning by saying, believe the patient. And that is where treatment starts. But as you look closer at opioid use and its ability to treat pain, and you look at the epidemic that this country has gone through as a result of opioids, when do you find that the only solution to treat someone's pain is to use opioids as treatment?
So it's important to note that opioids still have their room in pain management. Not the way it was done in the past, but for few selected patients who cannot be on the other modalities, it can be also for cancer pain patients, for terminal patients. So fewer patients still need opioids, not too many as it was the case before in the past. Go ahead.
Well, you said, you believe your patient when they come into the room, but if you have concerns about somebody who may be dealing with addiction and quite possibly wouldn't even recognize it or know it themselves, what's the process? What can you do as a doctor to treat?
So we have actually risk assessment tools before we start the use of narcotics, which I encourage everybody to use because it does give you a score at the end, which can tell you how likely the patient might develop addiction or be at risk if they use opioids. So if the risk is low and you think it's appropriate, it can be done. If you think the risk is high, then you should hold off. The other thing involving addiction medicine in the process, and when I talk about pain here, pain is really not one person or pain-trained physicians. It's a big foundation of many other providers, including addiction medicine, psychiatry, psychology, physical therapy. Too many people are incorporated together in the pain foundation to treat patients. That's why the role of addiction medicine is very important in helping us deal with those patients as well.
Let's go to Michael in Kokana. Michael, good morning. You're on the Ideas Network.
Good morning. There's two quick things I want to mention. First of all, the pendulum swings back and forth on this. I remember about 10 years ago, Wisconsin Public Radio had a guest on talking about how they were too restrictive. Doctors were too restrictive when giving out opioids. People really needed it. Now we're the opposite end of the spectrum. But my main point was opioids don't work very well for me. They cause more problems than the pain that they would help fix. And I had one doctor where he tried to give me a prescription. I had a minor eye injury. A dog scratched my eye. And he tried to prescribe me, and I said, I don't want it. The pain isn't that bad. He said, well, take the prescription. And he literally got mad at me when I refused. I took the script from him, but I never filled it out. But why would a doctor get mad at me? Are they reimbursed from the pharmaceuticals, or what would cause that kind of anger?
Dr. Al?
Again, fantastic question. So in another study we performed, we found that about 60 to 70% of patients who get a prescription for opioids after surgery, they either don't use it or don't even refill it. And that's so you are correct, actually. People get prescriptions for many reasons. I don't want to waste the time of the show here on the too many reasons why this has been going on. But it is true, like many patients don't need narcotics and they don't use them after surgery. And now we're trying to develop algorithms about who should get opioids after surgery, who should just be treated by over-the-counter medications or NSAIDs simply or other modalities. And I think that one of the reasons that caused the opioid epidemic is that everybody after a surgery, even if a minor surgery, got a prescription for opioids. So this question is spot on, and it is a problem that again, we're publishing on, we're doing our research, and we're developing methods to kind of work with our surgeons on just prescribing for the people who need it only.
Doctor, are researchers or pharmaceutical companies working on developing non-narcotic pain medicine that could treat chronic pain as effectively as some narcotics?
Yes, so there are many in development. Some are being approved. There are actually talking about some opioids that work on different receptors are not as addictive. So all the research is evolving. And we currently have actually some alternatives available that we use for treating pain. So there are some, and there are many kind of in the trial phase.
Dr. Abed El-Sayed, our guest, the medical director of the UW Pain Services and UW Pain Management Clinic, and he's with us for the hour to take your questions. And Richard from Loganville called, couldn't stay with us, but he said many people have chronic issues, and they're considered junkies by some, in Richard's words, as if people addicted to opioids have a choice. Richard says they don't. He says that he's been stigmatized and has to travel 150 miles round trip just to get the treatment to find relief. Dr. Al, have you seen efforts to treat people with chronic pain be infringed upon by our other efforts to try to curb the opioid epidemic?
Yes, we see this all the time. And again, we always have to work with the patient. It's nature of the medication. Once you start using opioids, your body can develop what we call, you know, tolerance addiction. Sometimes it's actually out of the hand of the patient. That's why we need to work with patients and not stigmatize anyone about, you know, just, again, providing them with alternatives, weaning down the opioids, you know, involving addiction medicine and psychology and psychiatry to deal with the issue. And we have too many success stories because most patients, whenever they feel the care and get the appropriate care, they do really work with you, and you know, you create a major change.
Well, and Dr. Al, I'd be curious what your takeaway was from the hearings a couple weeks ago about the Sackler family, Purdue Pharmaceuticals, and the mislabeling of OxyContin. Did you see that play a role in what became this country's opiate epidemic?
Yes, it's unfortunately that. I think some companies came with advertising for their medication in a different way than they actually work, and Purdue Pharma is just one of them. I'm glad that this is all coming to light now to just make sure you know, you understand the risk of the medications you take.
Yeah. Doctor, I have to ask you about medical marijuana because it is something I have seen with patients with multiple sclerosis, and they have said it is. They have said they have received relief from marijuana, and this is self-reporting, but it is to me. And rule number one is to believe the patient, right? So currently, we got 36 states that have legalized marijuana for treatment, and in your role as medical director at UW Pain Services and the UW Pain Management Clinic, how do you see marijuana as a alleviant?
So, I mean, this is probably the topic of the hour, is talking about medical marijuana. And, you know, we don't have enough research to show, like, how marijuana works or what it's good for. So we don't have enough evidence. And I understand that I have patients who will swear by it. They use it. It works. But I fear the long-term effects that we don't know anything about. So maybe it helps them now, but maybe you come in 5-6 years, find, like, terrible side effects. So that's why I'm really urging, you know, all the states to just run research on medical marijuana, you know, prove the evidence, you know, regulate it. And then I'm hoping that we have a good tool for our patients.
We're discussing chronic pain this hour with Dr. Al. He's offering helpful advice as to how to treat our pain, alleviate. He's also a chronic pain physician based in Madison, taking your calls this morning. And if you are in the health medicine field, if you are a pharmacist, if you work in pain management, how do you see the efforts for treatment for alleviating chronic pain? 1-800-642-1234. Chris in Milwaukee, you're on the morning show on the Ideas Network. Good morning.
Good morning. My friend was in a car accident decades ago. She, all kinds of things are broken in her body, and she's got pins, and she's got plates, and she also has brain damage, which causes seizures, and believe me, she's on plenty of medication. Well, she's in so much pain that I take her to the pain management place, and they give her some stuff that put her to sleep so bad, I was afraid she wouldn't wake up. So I started taking her to the acupuncturist, and believe me, it helps. I have to keep taking her every few days, but it helps, and it's not drugs. But do you think you can get an insurance company to pay for acupuncture, or your chiropractor, or God forbid, a hypnotist? No, they're happy to pay for pills, and then you tell me they're trying to make more pills that they're happy to pay for. What about the other things? I'm very upset here. I'll take my response off the air.
Chris, thank you for the call, and I'm sure you're not alone in that. But there are multiple modalities for dealing with chronic pain, doctor. But what role do you see insurance companies playing when it comes to treatment?
It's a huge role. Insurance companies sometimes deny certain, actually non-opioid prescriptions, approve opioid prescriptions. And as mentioned here, that acupuncture is not covered by most insurance companies, as many other modalities like acupuncture.
But do you see it as effective? I mean, as a medical director, do you see these treatments as effective?
They are actually effective. I mean, and that's an example. Again, it's not for everyone, but definitely when you pick up the right patient that you want to try something that non-opioid, non-narcotic for, you would like to follow on anything. And there are some good studies about acupuncture. And I was personally involved in many advocative activities to try to get acupuncture approved by insurance. But unfortunately, so far, it is not. And there are many other modalities that need to get to be approved by insurance.
Dr. Ala Abed Al-Sayed is our guest, the medical director of the UW Pain Services and UW Pain Management Clinic. And as they have continued to help their patients throughout this pandemic and at the same time dealing with the global pandemic, an opioid epidemic, and compassionate care for their patients. Take your calls still at 1-800-642-1234 this morning. If you are someone with chronic illness or know someone who has, and how are they dealing with it? I'm Lee Rayburn in for Kate Archer Kent this morning, and you're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. You ever have back pain so bad that you're left to wonder if humans were ever even meant to be bipedal? It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Lee Rayburn, and I can't be the only one forced to contemplate potential evolutionary missteps while staring at the ceiling, lying prone, and not daring to move. Fortunately, it's temporary, and I have access to relief, but how about you? 1-800-642-1234 is the phone number. Email ideas at WPR.org. Our guest, Dr. Ala Abed Al-Sayed. He's the medical director of the UW Pain Services and the UW Pain Clinic. Let's go to Susan in De Pere this morning. Susan, good morning. You're on the Ideas Network.
Good morning.
What do you have for us this morning? You were injured back in 2001?
2002, yeah. I took my physics students to Busch Gardens for a lesson on motion and gravity, and I ended up fracturing my sacrum and a couple vertebrae and rupturing some discs. And in the course of 2 years, I had 3 back surgeries, fusions. I had, a couple discs removed because and had fusions. Since then, I have had every procedure you can imagine, radio frequency rhizotomies every 6 months, medial branch injections, SI joint injections, physical therapy, like I said. And I found out during the course of this that I've had osteoporosis.
Wow.
So every time something happens, I just within a month ago fractured 2 ribs falling off my bike.
Oh, Susan. Now, so where's your pain today? Has any of this alleviated your chronic pain?
The only thing that alleviates it is pain medication. And I myself have taken myself off of it. My doctor's been very good about, following my wishes on that. And I have been able to, but as I mentioned, I just recently fell off, had a bike accident and fractured 2 of my ribs. And it's just this constant up and down, up and down, up and down.
So, Susan, are you looking for something to alleviate this pain that would not be an opioid?
Correct.
Dr. Al, do you have something for Susan here?
Yes. Thank you, Susan. And, I see many patients who have gone through what you've gone through and understand the risk of narcotics. There are advanced procedures that can be done to help with the pain. One of them, again, it's one of them, but there are many, is called intrathecal drug delivery, where you implant a device actually that does deliver opioids, but at extremely low doses. and can help with the pain. And usually we use it for cases like Susan's, where, again, everything else failed and there is no room for more narcotics. In addition to physical therapy, you know, seeing a dietitian to kind of adjust for the nutrition and the osteoporosis. So it requires a team to work, improve kind of the pathology and the pain.
Let's go to Julie in Oshkosh. Julie, good morning. You're on the morning show.
Hello. I was in a an accident, and I developed I had a stretch injury to my peroneal nerve. Down in my lower calf and ankle and foot there. And I was in a horrendous amount of pain. But I also, in the course of my job, I drive a lot, and I didn't want to be on any narcotic medications there. And my doctor prescribed a compound cream. It was a compound of like 9 different narcotic medications that I could apply. I apply it like 4 times a day, and I mean it took the pain away. And because of that, it enabled me to at least, to be able to take part in therapy and walk. And
didn't
and,
make you drowsy or any mental side effects?
No, wow. That was why I wanted it, because I didn't want. Because I drove a lot and I didn't want to be on any kind of medication
sure.
that would dull that. And it worked incredibly. And I was like, why are they not prescribing more of this? Because I couldn't believe how well it worked.
Huh. Dr. Al, what do you know about these compound creams?
So we use them a lot, actually. I'm glad you talked about them, because, you know, that's an example that even if patient is appropriate for narcotics, sometimes just they can't use them for their lifestyle, for their kind of job. It's risky to be on those medications. So we do use significant, actually, amounts of compound medications for ointments or creams or gels for our patients. And that's the importance, again, to be understanding, and that pain is not a single person practice. That's why in our practice, we have a lot of people, different minds, and we take the patient from A to Z in pain management, because there are too many modalities and we have to fit it to the right patient.
You're not treating the pain, you're treating the person.
Exactly.
Yeah, we do have a couple other questions here. Haas from Minnesota called, couldn't stick around, but he did ask about the use of gabapentin as a pain reliever, something that I've heard before, and when it comes to back pain, doctor?
Gabapentin is one of the medications we use on many of our patients, and it's actually effective, and it's kind of one of the first agents we start using, because it has... good safety profile. It's well covered by insurance, and patients can use it for certain durations of time. So definitely it's a medication that should be tried.
Carolyn Milwaukee, you're on the morning show on the Ideas Network. Good morning.
Good morning. My brother in New York was in tremendous back pain for a week. He was flat on his back, or somehow he went to various very good doctors there, and this is 40 years ago, maybe around 1990, with 30 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
He went to some of the best doctors. Well, he ended up meeting a woman who was a physiologist from France. She did intensive ballet exercise as a way of relieving pain. And she had a perfect exercise, or somehow she cured him, and he has never had back pain since then for 30 years. But he constantly continued doing those wonderful exercises. And one of them in particular that he uses is called the bus stop, particularly for the back.
The bus stop. If we could have cured back pain 30 years ago, I believe there would have been a lot of people doing ballet today. There's experts say about 80% of the population has dealt with back pain at some point in their lives. And every time I deal with that back pain, I always hear, are you stretching? Are you doing any yoga? Are you strengthening your core? So it would seem to me that perhaps ballet could play a role in alleviating back pain, Dr. Al.
Yes. And, those past few calls just can tell it that, narcotic is just one piece in treating pain, but the answer can be only physical therapy. The answer can be only a compound cream. It can be just doing some exercises. And that's why, again, important to be in an interdisciplinary, multidisciplinary program where you have all the people working together, doing the best for the patient, because sometimes the answer is actually very simple.
Dr. Al, you have handled all our questions this morning, and I very much appreciate it. I have an email here from Lou, who's asking about the book, The Brain's Way of Healing. And he wants to know about brain mapping and visualization and whether or not our own mind could play a role in healing chronic pain.
Absolutely. So there are many studies going on in that era, and there are centers in the brain that were identified to cause what's called emotional pain catastrophizing. And we know about all of this, actually, which can aggravate pain way beyond the inciting event. I'll give you an example. In certain conditions, we see that patients have pain to touch. That's because the brain is actually playing a role here. Touch doesn't cause pain.
Right.
And controlling this definitely is one of the things we work on to improve pain.
Dr. Ala Abed Al Sayed, thank you so much for your knowledge this morning.
Thank you. And in just in a few seconds here, I would like to say that with the pandemic, we will see post-COVID pain conditions related to COVID-19. So I want to assure patients that you're not alone in this. We started seeing patients who have post-COVID headaches and pains either related to the virus or to the treatment or being in bed for several months. Something we will have to deal with after the fact, but I encourage patients, if you have any of those, go seek help.
Dr. Al, thank you. This is The Morning Show, and I'm Lee Rayburn in for Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to the Ideas Network.